Sunday, October 29th. We had to go in today for the surrogates briefing. The president was going to open for 5 minutes, but talk for a half an hour. Made the point that on the final week, with all the rumors that will be coming from everything, that we must be confident, positive, not defensive. Lay out the positive line, emphasize get out the vote, highlight the issues, but emphasize four or five key points. Get people thinking about our issues, not theirs. Draw the line positively with no name calling, but hit hard. Go for a vote for, not just a vote against. On a corruption issue, it's libelous and slanderous. It should be answered quickly, but not stay on it. The two big issues are peace and pocketbook. Regarding pocketbook, the economy is moving up. We have the highest rate of growth, the lowest inflation of any major industrial nation. We're doing better than anyone else has done with the economy. We should continue these policies to hold down the cost of living. The choice here is that we continue the controls that are keeping the cost of living down. They would go back to the policies that failed. On taxes, we have a flat commitment, no increase. We can keep it by the vetoes. They would go for higher taxes. Their budget would require a 50% increase. On higher prices, they go for 100% parity and voluntary controls that would add 35 to 80 million to the welfare rolls. We're not satisfied with the record. We want more growth and more jobs. We want full employment without war and without inflation. A subsidiary issue he feels is crime and law enforcement. We've stopped the increase in crime. We've declared an all-out war against narcotics. And we've made non-permissive court appointments, which all should be emphasized. In foreign policy, he referred to in detail to the stop on the motorcade yesterday, where the family had a sign out saying, "Please shake hands. No amnesty. Our son was killed in Vietnam." He gave a very personal, quite a long talk about the handshake, referring to his mother's hands and her hard work, and these people's hands and their hard work. And he made the point of peace with honor, not surrender, guarantee of the POWs, not begging. South Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia have a total ceasefire, not just Vietnam, that we're building a foundation for a lasting peace. He referred to the trips to Peking and Moscow and made that was getting to the heart of the problem of peace, that we refuse to let Vietnam obscure the big picture, especially in the historic year of 1972, where we've really developed a chance for peace for a generation. And he got to the point that they may feel or wonder whether the campaign was worth it. And he talked about the beautiful people who sit on the beach or play on the tennis courts in Newport and Palm Beach. And he said, "But you're the lucky people, they aren't." It was hard and all that. And then he talked about the De Gaulle quote about France, and then said he feels it's true of a person, that he's never his true self, his complete self, unless he's engaged in a great enterprise, and that we all have played a part in such an enterprise. Then he said, "I'm a tough anti-communist, but I'm not anti-Chinese, anti-Russian, or anti-Polish." Ehrlichman hit two issues, corruption and vetoes. On corruption, he said that we should use every question as an opportunity to talk about our issues. The problem is the number of charges with no evidence, and it's hard to prove a negative. If you deal with the charges on the same plane as they're made, you'll lose. You must move the answer to what you want to say. He used Chapin as an example, and the fact is that his duties at the time he was supposed to be running the sabotage thing were to put together the Chinese and Russian trips. He made three trips to China, spent hours in the Situation Room, etc. He referred to the Sperling article, saying that the issue is not significant because the public is unwilling to impute liability to the president on the basis of the charges offered. So you should move from the Chapin question to his great responsibility for these trips, and then move to a discussion of the trips and foreign policy. He referred to the Post article on me and said to take that as a case study. The sources were based on two reports, and both of them have been denied. So we should make the point of how hard it is to prove a negative. On legislation, he said the vetoes are to hold the spending in line. Regarding the water bill veto, 2.5 years ago, President sent up a $6 billion water bill, which is all that can be spent. This new bill left no discretion to stop the cash flow, and our highest priority will be a new water bill. On the HEW veto, a continuing resolution covers the current needs, so we haven't stopped the work of the department. The veto holds level at 72, avoids a compulsory $500 million over the budget. We won't do this extra spending because we're fighting inflation and fighting new taxes. We're building the buying power of the dollar. Also, he hit the point that the president is obliged by the Congress now to analyze 132 bills, which is 20% of their 2 years' work, all in this period when he also has to run a political campaign and work out the war ending, which is all a good answer to the hiding in the White House. Al Haig hit the Vietnam Agreement, the specific points, first an international ceasefire in Southeast Asia, North and South Vietnam, end the bombing and the mining, second, a release of all POWs and all data on MIAs, third, a return of all U.S. military forces in 60 days, fourth, acceptance of the continuance of the government of South Vietnam with its leadership, its army, its police, and its structure. In other words, this is not a coalition government. The details of working out the future would be left to the NLF and the GVN. Fifth, a tripartite commission to advise and counsel only regarding democratic free elections. So in essence, we've moved Hanoi from a solid position that we impose a communist government to and dismantle existing governments and armed forces to a thing where we hold the present government. Sixth, a ban on the introduction of personnel and supplies to South Vietnam except for replacement of equipment. Seventh, it preserves the territorial integrity of Cambodia and Laos. And the withdrawal of all foreign forces from those countries. Eighth, it provides an interlocking supervisory bodies and an international conference within 30 days. He says this is a very major achievement and a major concession on the Hanoi's part. He then pointed out how it varies from McGovern's position. He would withdraw totally in 90 days unilaterally. He would leave the return of POWs to the goodwill of Hanoi, where we have a solid commitment in 60 days. He would leave Asians fighting Asians. We have a cessation of the end of all fighting. He would not include Cambodia and Laos. We've locked them in firmly. He would withdraw all support from Tu and the GVN. And in the short term, this would mean a communist takeover with the bloodbaths and so forth, where we have continuity of the GVN and have turned over the solution of the long term to the parties involved. Then he turned to why and how did this happen. First, the May 8th decision to bomb and mine had a major effect on Hanoi's political Politburo. Second, the president has always viewed this in the total context, and the Peking and Soviet trips were very significant regarding their support of Hanoi. Third, the November 3rd speech in 1969, which outlined the course of Vietnamization and meeting the challenges. Then the challenges that came along the way, plus Cambodia, Laos, May 8th, all we moved positively and strongly to each challenge. We got there not from softness, naivete, or compromise, but from strength, determination to do the right thing, even if it stirred up opposition. Where do we stand now? We would not have gone public. Hanoi forced it. They went public on their own, so Kissinger laid out the precise status in his press briefing. It's Hanoi who is pressing hard for a fast settlement. Why? One, because they're fearful of a victorious president after November 7th and that he would be less compromising. And two, on the battlefield, they have optimum conditions for a settlement now because they have their troops in place. They could claim maximum control, but this is largely a facade which will shrivel fast. We've insisted that Saigon's views be given appropriate weight. The president's instructed that we will not be stampeded into a precipitous settlement with any loose ends, and we've got to get them worked out. But once they're nailed down, we'll settle as quickly as possible. Given the goodwill of Hanoi, we expect we'll work this out within a matter of weeks. We have a promise, therefore, of long-term peace in Southeast Asia. Bill Rogers then emphasized the president's overall accomplishments. The peace is the overriding issue, but it's like good health. You don't talk about it unless you don't have it. Negotiation versus confrontation, which the president talked about, Bill compared to now versus 1968. In all areas of the world, we now have negotiations underway. Korea, the North and South are having their first discussions because of the president's leadership. We've lived up to our treaty obligations. Laos, the government, and the Pathet Lao are negotiating. India, Pakistan are having their first discussions in memory. Cyprus, Greek, and Turks are discussing. East and West Germany are negotiating. Overall, the world is more peaceful. We came into office with 2.5 wars going, Vietnam, Nigeria, and the Middle East. Now there's a ceasefire in the Middle East. We've ended the war in Africa. There are no casualties in Vietnam, and we're withdrawing from there and from other areas. Also, conditions are much more peaceful in the U.S., the campuses, streets, and so forth. We should emphasize that President Nixon is the world leader in the cause of peace and recognized as such throughout the world. One of the big pieces of evidence is the Soviet support of his reelection in spite of McGovern's plan to surrender in Vietnam and, in effect, to the Soviets. We tend to forget the image the president has throughout the world. But all of what he's done is not for plaudits or bouquets, but because he's building a structure for peace. We have scheduled now the European Security Conference next year, the MBFR conference in mid-year, Middle East negotiations, hopefully. He hit McGovern's proposals to abandon Taiwan and recognize the PRC. Even the PRC didn't ask for that. On the Japanese seat in the Security Council, we'd already done it, and dropping Latin American treaty relations would be a disaster. He emphasized we followed a bipartisan policy based on mutual security since World War II, and that Vietnam is a question of national morality. We have fought with the Vietnamese and have committed to support them to prevent a communist takeover by force. They've relied on us, and we've got to back them up. McGovern wants to get out, with no agreement on POWs, just hope, and take all our equipment with us and provide no more economic aid. This would be directly contradictory to all we've stood for. It would assure the direct collapse of South Vietnam, complete surrender to the enemy. We should answer McGovern head on. It's deceitful, and he knows it. Regarding the point that it was time for the election, that we could have done it before. Hanoi answers that because nothing could have been done before October 8th. This is bunk, a disgraceful comment. He knows better. Someone should ask McGovern if he still supports his Vietnam policy. Now that we have these concessions from Hanoi, does he still support his policy 1,000%? If not, he has to agree with the Nixon proposal. If so, we can hit him on the fact that the Nixon proposal is much better. End of October 29th.